The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Boker Tov. Good, thank you. For those people who are interested in the result of last night's football game, it was 2-2 in the end between Uruguay and Argentina at Bloomfield Stadium, after Messi had to score a penalty in the dying moments of the game in order to bring Argentina on level, pegging with Uruguay. So an interesting game. Unfortunately kind of damaged a little bit by the events of last night. Once again, a bit of an unstable night in Israel.
Yeah, so tell us about it. We were laughing a little bit earlier. In fact, I want to go to it because the BBC had the most BBC headline ever, and it said, the Israel-Gaza ceasefire holding despite rocket fire.
Well, rocket fire this morning, in the early hours of the morning, from Syria.
Yeah, I believe so. So tell us about this.
Of course, this has come as a bit of a surprise to all of us because, of course, the focus has been very much on Gaza and what's been happening with Islamic Jihad in Gaza. And yet, at 4:52 this morning, residents of the Golan Heights were woken up to the sounds of blaring sirens. Four rockets fired towards the Golan Heights from Syrian territory. They were immediately detected by Israel's anti-missile system. And in fact, we understand that there were four interceptions by Iron Dome in that area. So not only is Iron Dome deployed in the south of Israel and, of course, in the central part of Israel against the possibility of rocket fire from Gaza, but indeed also very much deployed in the north in order to be available and be ready for the possibility of rocket fire from Syria and indeed from Lebanon as well. So it's not exactly clear who was responsible for firing these rockets from Syria. We do know that not only are there Syrian government forces operational in the southern Syrian area, but of course there are a number of other renegade groups operating in that area. So we haven't heard exactly who has been blamed or who's been held responsible for these attacks, these rockets that were fired. What we know from the IDF officially is that there were four interceptions, that there were no events of rockets falling in Israeli territory, no injuries, no damage caused, and in fact, even probably no sign of anything, any even shrapnel falling on Israeli territory, which leads us to believe that those interceptions may well have even taken place over Syrian territory, and that would be quite an interesting one to talk about a little bit more once we have a little bit more information. There are also separate reports of explosions having been heard near Damascus Airport. Now, I'm not sure whether these explosions were before the four rockets were fired or afterwards. So in other words, it's not clear what comes as a result of what. But it could quite easily be the case that the IDF already has retaliated against these rockets being fired by sending planes in to attack targets within that Damascus Airport area. Damascus Airport and the area that surrounds it has been a constant target for the IDF over the past few years because that's really the location where so many of the arms and ammunition that are headed towards Hezbollah in Lebanon are actually landed from Iran, from Russia, from other locations. A lot of all of that moves through the Damascus Airport area. And so we have seen Israeli attacks against that area in the past. And of course, there's a lot of intelligence about what goes on there. And so it wouldn't surprise me that area would be a target either as a retaliatory attack, or indeed maybe it might have even been an attack before the four rockets were fired, and that the four rockets may well have been the Syrian retaliation against the IDF activities. Not clear at the moment. We don't really know what started and what came afterwards. But what we do know, of course, is that the whole northern border is kind of less stable today as a result of all of that, even though no particular instructions have been issued today for the residents of the Golan Heights of that particular area. They've all been advised to continue business as usual. So that kind of gives us the impression that the IDF are not expecting this situation to persist, and that might have just been a kind of one-off event where rockets were fired, but they're not expecting that to continue into today.
Yeah, well, so we'll have to keep a close eye on that situation, but difficult indeed. And again, I keep thinking about how the world press will report on these stories, and for somehow they've kind of written off anything that comes in from Gaza because of the narrative that Gaza is sort of this occupied territory. But how would they possibly justify rockets from Syria? Well, they probably won't. They just won't report on it. But interesting to see nevertheless.
Well, it's fascinating to see how they could possibly regard Gaza as occupied territory. I mean, well, I do know that there is a lot of sensitivity around the so-called blockade and the fact that, you know, Israel is very sensitive about what goes in and out of Gaza for good reason. I mean, if, you know, we found that Gaza was kind of running an economy and just continuing their daily business in order to try and, you know, make a good future for people living there, then, of course, the flow of goods and services in and out of Gaza would be an entirely different situation to what it is today. And of course, the whole involvement of Iran is very interesting. And, you know, with the Salem, because there's a lot that we can say about Iran, but the two things that are interesting about Iran are, first of all, that they were very much supportive of Islamic Jihad, and Hamas were kind of a little sidelined last week through all those events. And I just wonder whether the whole attempt to try to reconcile later in the week wasn't an attempt by Hamas to really to re-enter the whole relationship with Iran. That's the first thing. The second thing is that locally in Iran, things are really coming to a head with the local population protesting against economic problems that they are experiencing in Iran, and asking the question, why is our tax money being sent to terror groups abroad when we haven't even got food and general services that we would expect from the government in Iran? And so it's interesting that that question is now being asked of the Iranian government. The answer's, of course, not forthcoming at the moment.
And of course, so just to reiterate that when anyone talks about, when the international media talks about the so-called Gaza blockade, they always seem to forget that Gaza shares a border with Egypt, and Egypt is maintaining exactly the same type of so-called blockade because it is worried about what is being smuggled into that area.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Egypt very much cooperating with Israel in order to try and create as much security around Gaza as possible. Of course, the Egyptians keeping a very low profile, even though they're very, very active in, you know, policing the Gaza border area. They're as sensitive as Israel is to some of the terror activities that are going on there. And Israel and Egypt cooperating very closely, particularly, for example, on events of last week where the Egyptians were very active in trying to promote a ceasefire. They were the ones who really brokered it, and that's not for the first time.
Absolutely. All right. Let's just talk about the coalition attempts. Where are we in this process?
Well, today is really the last opportunity for Benny Gantz to form his government. It seems as if Avigdor Lieberman and his Yisrael Beiteinu party continue to be the kingmaker in all of this, still negotiating with both Kahol Lavan, headed by Benny Gantz, and the Likud, which of course is Prime Minister Netanyahu's party. Lots of messages coming closer to each other, really coming from Netanyahu, whereas previously he was highly critical of Avigdor Lieberman and had a few choice negative things to say about him in the press. He's been very, very cautious in recent days, and especially yesterday, to show that there's a more of a close relationship, that they are not that far away from each other, that there is some cooperation going on. So there clearly has been some progress in the negotiations that are going on, at least between Avigdor Lieberman and Prime Minister Netanyahu. It's not clear what all of that means, because we still don't have a situation where any of the two parties will be able to secure 61 seats in order to form a majority government. So Benny Gantz really has the last opportunity today to bring together a minority government. Netanyahu continues to criticize the possibility of the Joint Arab List Party being party to this in any way. And I don't think there's any prospect that they will be part of the coalition. But I think at the moment what's being discussed is that they will simply sit and not vote at all, they will abstain from a vote and effectively keep the seats that they hold and the votes that they hold out of the voting, such that a minority government can be formed. I don't think that Gantz can really expect support from the Joint Arab List at all, but to the extent that they won't vote and they will abstain from possible votes, obviously that becomes very, very instrumental in all of this. If by the end of today, or more accurately tomorrow morning, Gantz can't form a government, then it's all bets are off. 3 weeks in which anybody can form a government. And I think that Netanyahu kind of fancies his chances to try to form a government in that period of time, which of course he will be entitled to do. There was some talk of the religious parties possibly compromising on some of Lieberman's demands, because most of the demands that Avigdor Lieberman brings to the table are demands which relate to the religious establishment and the control that the religious establishment have over some everyday issues that civilian Israelis have to deal with, such as laws of marriage, laws of divorce, and things like that, which affect those people whose halachic position is questionable in terms of the Rabbanut. And so there was some discussion about the fact that some of the ultra-Orthodox parties were willing to compromise with Lieberman. That was then retracted afterwards, so it's not exactly clear where all of that stands. It was very interesting that Netanyahu made a comment about Yair Lapid, saying, you know, because Lapid has come out also quite anti the religious establishment and the religious parties in general. But Netanyahu said yesterday that Yair Lapid would put on tefillin and would wear a shtraimel if the religious parties would join his coalition. Mm. You know, this is his way of saying he would sell out quite cheaply just in order to get them to join the coalition to form a government. It's very difficult for me to see that happening. But be that as it may, today I think will be the most frantic of the activity, particularly at the Kahol Lavan camp, to try and get things together. Interestingly, Prime Minister Netanyahu and his Likud party called an emergency summit yesterday of the right-wing bloc of 55 seats that have been formed, eight parties that have come together to form, emergency summit to discuss their next steps. Mm-hmm. I think they're plotting something for the next 3 weeks once Benny Gantz's mandate period expires tomorrow morning.
Anthony, very quickly, there were two important rulings, one positive for Israel, one negative. The EU deciding to label products from the West Bank on the one side, and on the other side, the US saying that the West Bank settlements are no longer inconsistent with international law. Tell us about the EU fairly quickly.
Well, the EU ruling was a ruling of a 15-bench European Court of Justice decision. 15 judges on the bench. So this is quite a serious decision. And it talked particularly about foodstuffs originating in the so-called territories, which they talked about being occupied by the State of Israel. So they have laid down saying that the 1967 borders really delineate where what they call the State of Israel begins and ends, and that anything beyond the green line, as we know it, which are the 1967 borders, needs to be labeled as coming from that area specifically. And, you know, there's quite a lot to talk about. In fact, this was a case about Psagot Winery, which is located beyond the Green Line, just north of Jerusalem. And they challenged a decision that was handed down by a French court that said that goods produced in the West Bank and in East Jerusalem, and indeed in the Golan Heights, needs to be labeled as originating in an Israeli settlement, in inverted commas. And effectively, the European Court of Justice, High Court of Justice, has upheld this decision, saying that the European consumers are entitled to know that goods come from that area. We can talk about how that links into BDS, because they were quite eager, at least the embassy in Israel was eager to point out that this is not about supporting BDS and that they're anti-BDS, and yet this particular decision has come forth. So unfortunately, we don't have much time now to talk about it, but I think, you know, it is an interesting discussion that we can hold in the next few days.
Yeah, let's try and pick up on this tomorrow because it is an important one. Anthony Reich, it is 8 o'clock. This is where we leave you. We'll catch up tomorrow, and I do want to, as I said, continue this conversation. I think that it is an important one.